This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. In the last state budget, Wisconsin lawmakers made several changes to the way teachers are licensed in the state, including the creation of a lifetime teaching license. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, or DPI, has been working to incorporate these changes and more into the licensure process in the state. Joining us to talk about where the agency is at in the changes and how local teachers and schools will likely be affected are David DeGeer, Director of Teacher Education, Professional Development, and Licensing at the State Department of Public Instruction, John Havlicek, President of the La Crosse Education Association and teacher at Central High School, Mike Bigley, Superintendent of Whitehall School District, and Pat Marcus, Director of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse's Institute for Professional Studies in Education. Now, before we get started talking about licensure changes in the state, I just wanted to take a few moments to touch on some different areas that have been in the news lately that are impacting schools in Wisconsin. After a shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, a national debate has really blossomed around gun control and school safety. And we've seen that play out in Wisconsin as well, with Governor Scott Walker releasing his school safety plan and calling a special session of the legislature last week. You know, I wanted to just start by, John, having your thoughts on what are the latest proposals for school safety in Wisconsin?
You know, there's money earmarked. It's, you know, kind of an eye-popping number at $100 million. But when you get into the weeds on it, it's a series of grants, and it's spread out over a number of years. And most of it is I think, going to end up as like entryway remodeling and security cameras and things of that nature. But I think we want to keep track of the larger picture that schools are not unsafe now. No amount of security cameras is really going to solve the underlying problem, which is we have a gun violence problem in our country. Although this is good, and I think the schools will certainly be welcoming of some of that money, I think we also have to not lose sight of the bigger picture.
We have heard from critics of Governor Walker's plan that there is no specific, issue addressing firearms in the plan. You know, Mike, as a superintendent of Whitehall Schools, I wonder, you know, what your thoughts are on this proposal and maybe what Wisconsin schools need to address this issue of safety.
I think Wisconsin public schools in general, perhaps we need to really narrow down the focus of that discussion or broaden it, depending on how you look at it. We perhaps need to redefine exactly what it is we're supposed to do. As we look at the multitude of things that we are asked to do each and every day, our staff members, our teachers, in looking at the scenario of violence, it's a lot about culture. It's a lot about the societal breakdown. When you look at this type of behavior, it repeats itself in the past. What can we learn from that? What do we need to do? I don't think we can tie this into any one specific issue. We have some high-profile media-based scenarios everybody has an idea of. I think the greater conversation is what do we need to do for our kids, for our families, for our citizens to better prepare them to handle adversity, to handle challenging scenarios. One of them, obviously, is gun violence. Another is school safety in general. As John said, schools are not unsafe. When you look at this true statistics, they are one of, if not the safest place people can be. That gets lost in the conversation pretty easily.
One issue that has been highly debated around the nation that has come out of this conversation is the idea of allowing teachers and other staff to have access to firearms at schools. Mike, I wonder if you just have any thoughts on this idea and whether we're likely to see schools in Wisconsin pushing for this idea.
I'm not sure your show was long enough for my thoughts on this idea. I think the simple answer to me is that is not a solution. Putting more guns or putting guns in general in schools is not a great scenario. It perhaps sounds good superficially when you start looking at the potential for bystanders to be injured by folks who aren't necessarily trained at the degree of law enforcement. I look at in an idea, if you have a situation that is escalating in a school, the last thing you want there is a firearm. You know, I think schools that have resource officers that are trained, absolutely, perfect, okay? In a small rural version, I will tell you, our police office, our Whitehall Police Department office is in our building. That's what we have chosen to do. We can't afford, with our size, a resource officer. I think as emotions slow a little bit and logical, calm thought prevails, I think people will understand that's not a great idea. Is it a deterrent? It could be. But I think we can do a lot more with again, focusing on culture both inside of communities and inside of schools.
Another issue in the news lately that has been affecting teachers is, you know, teachers in West Virginia went on strike for 9 days to petition lawmakers in their state for better pay and better health insurance. John, I wonder what your thoughts are on this instance, most notably because West Virginia, like Wisconsin, teachers there do not have the right to collective bargaining through unions, and I just wonder what this instance in West Virginia says about, you know, Wisconsin teachers.
Yeah, you know, in Wisconsin, we do still have collective bargaining. It is severely restricted. And I think what the West Virginia teachers showed is that, you know, if we stand together, we can accomplish great things. And, you know, I do a lot of stuff with labor in general. And, you know, obviously as a union guy, I'm a big proponent of labor. And I think what they did was they brought the discussion to their community at large first and then to the entire country. That, you know, we are charging our educators, because it's not just teachers, it's administration, it's the whole gamut. We are charging these folks with doing more and more and more, and we are judging them by standards that are sometimes ridiculous and sometimes simply unattainable, and then asking them to do it, in the case of West Virginia, for poverty wages. And that, I think, is going to start, or I hope is going to start, a much broader conversation around our country, which is, you know, what is a living wage and what are appropriate wages? And hopefully this will spread to other sectors, other regions, and other sectors of the economy.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about changes impacting school teachers in Wisconsin and the region. We're here with John Havlicek, president of the La Crosse Education Association, Mike Bigley, superintendent of Whitehall School District, Pat Marcus, director of the UWL's Institute for Professional Studies in Education, and David DeGeer from the Department of Public Instruction. Shifting back to today's focus, which is talking about, you know, changes to teacher licenses in Wisconsin. David, I wonder if you could start by talking a little bit about, you know, where DPI is at in this process of making changes, you know, kind of what has been changed so far and kind of, you know, what are the next steps?
So we're about to send to the legislature a rewritten version of our administrative rule on teacher preparation and licensing. And that rewrite includes both changes to bring us into compliance with the language in the state budget, as well as some broader changes to help address some of the staffing challenges that our districts across the state are facing. We have been working on this really for at least 2 years in terms of working with our stakeholders, with the challenges that they're facing. And the process from here is that three committees at the legislature will have a chance to review the rule, hold hearings if they want, and then hopefully it will be in place June 1st or July 1st.
So DPI was already in this process of making changes before the state legislature, you know, created new laws around licensing.
Correct. Our focus was in a completely different area. Our focus was looking at what roadblocks do we have that are preventing people from either going into teaching in the first place or for adding additional licensure. One of the things we heard was that we currently have a number of different science licenses. I believe there are 7 different science licenses. And, you know, for a small district like Whitehall, it is really difficult to have someone certified in all of the areas if they want to offer those courses. So one of the changes that we're proposing is to really move to more of a generalist preparation for teachers, and that there would be one science license, similar to we have one math license. We've had that for many years. And if districts wanted that teacher with, you know, the general license to teach some more difficult material, that the district would then work with the teacher to help get them the professional development they need.
David, I know that as part of this process, DBI held several public meetings around the state earlier this year, including one here in La Crosse. What were the biggest things you heard at these meetings?
There was one area, I think, that we heard at pretty much all the meetings, and that was regarding a section that we added on educator misconduct. And what we were trying to address was, where is the line, trying to help everyone identify, where is that line between having a positive, healthy relationship with a student and going over it to something that's really inappropriate? To be honest, we found that we were not able to put that into rule in a way that really everyone felt was clear. So that's something that we pulled out. Another area that we heard from the public was a really specific license. It's called an educational interpreter license. So these are people who provide sign language interpreters or interpretation for students who are deaf or hard of hearing. And we heard several different places about what the requirement should be in terms of testing and how those licenses should be renewed. There were a few people who provided testimony about lifetime licenses. You know, that's not something that we have any control over because it's in statute. We had some people testify about some of the testing requirements in the state, and we're currently providing flexibility to preparation programs in an emergency rule, and those changes will then become permanent in what we are sending to the legislature.
Pat, I know that there were some concerns that were voiced at the public meeting here in La Crosse. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what the biggest concerns you feel like are here in La Crosse.
Well, I would be happy to talk about the higher education perspective. I think one of the things that we are very concerned about is how it could negatively impact our ability to hire faculty. And so those are some of the things that we're really thinking about and concerned about. And one of them has to do with having to have the knowledge and skills across all developmental levels. And so right now, people come in as faculty members in their specialty area. And so that could have a negative impact on us. Another is how the language changed a bit in terms of what faculty's responsibilities are. So we just want people to understand that our faculty members do more than just teach. Our load is 12 credits. That means faculty are teaching 4 courses every semester, but they also are responsible for other things in terms of advising, in terms of being involved in research and components like that I think need to be still incorporated in. The other big thing was that now the language is talking about that faculty in higher education don't necessarily have to be full-time. And we take pride, in fact, in hiring faculty in different areas that have expertise to meet the needs of our teacher candidates. So if we're saying let's now say we can hire more part-time people or more adjuncts, then that is going to have an impact. We would want our faculty to be consistent. We would want them to be at the highest level in terms of qualifications.
And we received written testimony from the Wisconsin Association of Colleges of Teacher Education about those specific areas and a couple more. And the final version of our rule does address all of those concerns.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, David. John, can you talk a little bit about, you know, with these proposed changes that, you know, DPI is in the process of submitting to the legislature, you know, what do you think will be the biggest impacts to local teachers?
I think it's going to have some impact on the teacher pool, the candidate pool. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be a good impact. Currently, we already have a shortage, and creating easier pathways into the profession doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get more highly qualified candidates. And so I think we need to be a little bit careful there. I was a little concerned about the science, you know, condensing it from 7 to 1. Although I think the what I heard from people was that 7 was maybe too many, but 1 might be too few. I don't know if it quite compares to math, because if I'm going to teach calc, I have to understand algebra too. Whereas I think chemistry and biology are maybe significantly different. And then the lifetime licensure stuff, that's just a quagmire right now, because we've got lifetime licensure. We still have educator effectiveness. We have any number of different things that are almost competing priorities. So there's a lot of confusion amongst the current staff and I think current administration as well. And it's in terms of, you know, where do we have to put our time and our energy? So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, let's transition to this idea of lifetime licenses. David, I know that you said that this isn't something DPI necessarily has control over because it was, part of what the legislature created in the last budget. But I wonder if you could explain, you know, does that mean that once a teacher is certified, they're certified for life, or are there other qualifications that come with that?
Yes and no. Their license does not have an expiration date. But the legislature did include a provision that if they are not employed in a public school district for 5 or more consecutive years, that the DPI must invalidate their license. The public school district was an area that we raised as a concern because we have educators who are in so many more different places teaching, private schools, Department of Corrections, people work here at DPI. And so the legislature did just pass, you know, to add to the confusion, I guess, the legislature just passed Senate Bill 711, which is waiting for the governor's signature, that changed the language a little bit and would require us to go back and define in rule what it means to have successful experience in order to earn a lifetime license. And then the phrase that they changed was that in order to maintain that lifetime license, you have to be regularly employed in education. So we appreciate that they made those changes, but it does add more confusion and uncertainty until all these things get defined. And it's just going to take time for everyone to kind of read through and discuss and understand what the changes really mean.
That's David DeGeer, Director of Teacher Education, Professional Development, and Licensing at the State Department of Public Instruction, here with us today to talk about changes to the way teachers are licensed in Wisconsin. Also joining us is John Havlicek, President of the La Crosse Education Association, Mike Bigley, Superintendent of Whitehall Schools, and Pat Marcus, Director of UWL's Institute for Professional Studies in Education. You know, we're talking about the change that was made in the last budget that created lifetime teaching licenses in Wisconsin. Mike, I wonder what your thoughts are on this transition and what it means for your school district.
I think David touched on some of the more important things with flexibility. Each one of our school districts in the state of Wisconsin is unique. We all have our different characteristics. We have different needs. We have different strengths. I think that flexibility piece is significant. I think what I have not heard often enough in the discussion is there are still qualified folks determining who will be teaching our kids. Why would we want to put someone in place who is not qualified, doesn't have the skills? No one wants to do that. That part doesn't get talked about a lot. It gets used for a lot of both sides of the political spectrum. This whole scenario gets used quite a bit. I think the life license piece we have to remember as well is not new. This was in place up to about 15 years ago, and I could be off a little bit. David can correct me.
1983 was the last time we issued them.
So,
Thanks, David.
Thank you. But, you know, for the 20 years that I've been serving as a school superintendent, it wasn't till about 6 or 7 years ago that we stopped seeing folks with life licenses. Okay, so that part isn't all that new. I think that flexibility piece that goes back to a greater perspective of we have to redefine exactly what it is our schools are expected to do. We've done not much in the past, pick a number, 20 years, in terms of moving from an industrial revolution scenario that was meant to mass produce in a factory setting. We've not done much in terms of modifying for our kids' futures. And I think when we roll all of these things together and stop looking at each one of these pieces in isolation, then we might actually get some meaningful work done. I think the licensure piece, certainly the flexibility, some of that is great. I understand the higher ed concerns. I understand teacher concerns. I understand the politics of this. I think the bigger issue still has to be we have to look at what it is we're expected to do, redefine what it is we're trying to accomplish, and then we can set out to go get it done collectively.
Yeah, Pat.
And I think that's the key right there is working collaboratively together. So if we can work side by side with districts and with the DPI and higher education and all the teachers, then I think that's a win-win. So what is it that your needs are? I know that that's something we're very interested in. We're going to do a roadshow. We're going to be going out to districts. We're going to be talking to curriculum directors and superintendents and asking exactly that question. What is it you need, and how can we meet that need for you?
Yeah, I guess, you know, how does this idea of creating life licenses maybe create more pressure or expectations for the institutions that are training our teachers, you know, to make sure that they are prepared to be lifelong educators?
Well, and I think if you hear and listen to teachers are saying, we want professional development. Things are changing so quickly. You talk about trauma-informed schools, trauma-informed teaching. That's something that we're just hearing in the last couple of years, and it's really been a powerful thing. We know 4 or 5 children in every classroom either are presenting with a mental health issue or have experienced some kind of a trauma. Our teachers aren't necessarily equipped when they come in, brand new teachers, into a classroom to deal with those kinds of issues. So that's why ongoing professional development in that, in culturally responsive teaching, are all things that I think are very, very important. So that's why I think, again, we need to work together on these things because not all school districts need exactly the same thing. So help us define what exactly those things are so then we can gear up and help to try and address those issues.
And Hope, one of the challenges, David, one of the challenges that I see, especially for our UW campuses, is that an expectation is coming down from UW system that they need to get their students out on time, so 4 years or less, 120 credits. And to some extent, we are, as you've heard from the others, we're expecting more of teachers, but then the preparation programs are not necessarily going to have all the time that they would want with the students or the future teachers. So, you know, the more that we can do, work cooperatively, get preparation programs and districts working together, I think that's going to be a win for everybody.
Yeah, David brings up an interesting point, and Pat, I wonder if you have any response to this idea of pressure to get students out on time, but make sure they're fully equipped.
Well, in the last few years in our teacher preparation program, we've gone through a huge looking at our curriculum, looking at the credits, and getting it down to the 120 credits and getting students out and teachers out in 4 years. So that's been, that was a challenge, and it took many years for us to do that. So I think some of our concerns are, especially with the middle and high school range, the 4 to 12 license, that new category. Now, does that mean, because it's 4, that's new, 4 to 12, before it was 5 to 12. So does that mean then that our teachers need to be prepared to also teach elementary? That's something that our program is trying to figure out, try to see how this is all going to fall out. So, yes, I do think that's an issue. How is it that we prepare people and prepare our teachers to be able to teach exactly what we need to teach?
Another of the proposed changes that we kind of touched on earlier was certifying teachers in subject areas, you know, in order to provide more flexibility to school districts. You know, David, I know you touched on this earlier, but can you give us a brief review of how this this certification is changing to subject areas?
So there are 4 subject areas that are going to have multiple licenses collapsed into one, and that's English, language arts, music, science, and social studies. And if the rule becomes permanent as proposed, our next step will be to pull together groups of K-12 educators and teacher prep faculty for each of these areas to decide what is it that a beginning teacher needs to know and be able to do in order to teach music or science or social studies. And it really is going to be a challenge. You know, as John pointed out before, science, you know, chemistry is different than biology, unless you get to the molecular level, and then it gets even more interesting. But trying to get an idea, you know, what we're going to have to do before preparation programs can really change how they prepare for these new licenses is identify what is it that they need their students, their candidates to know and be able to do. I think in some areas that will be easier. I think in English language arts, it's probably going to be easier because we're pulling in some subjects like speech and journalism, whereas science, social studies, and even music, we're going to be pulling together general music, choral music, and instrumental music. And while there is a lot of overlap, you know, teaching a choir is very different than teaching a band. But what we need to do is figure out what is it that beginning level teacher needs, and then from there, how do we continue to provide the content-based professional development for teachers so that they can continue learning deeper in their field? I think that's an area that we probably all agree has not been as strong as we would like in our state.
Mike, I want to get your thoughts on this idea because, you know, I think the idea of, you know, creating more flexibility for teachers to teach other areas, you know, is really kind of, you know, advertised as a way to help rural school districts. I wonder what your thoughts are.
Well, I think certainly it is an opportunity to provide some relief and provide some flexibility. I think we have to, again, you'll hear me continue to bring this to light, is we need to continue to look at things not in isolation. I think we have to look at the ability for folks. Teachers used to be, like most industries, we were paid for, we were expected to be the providers of information. You've all heard the facilitator change from purveyor of information to facilitator of learning in those types of scenarios. Our entire world is changing. The world that our kids are going to live in looks nothing like the one we grew up in. I think we have to look at that across the board and identify what are the key components. We don't expect, especially, and I think there was a key word in David's last statement of beginning teachers. I don't know any teachers right now that aren't engaged in meaningful professional development throughout their careers. Okay, whether those are graduate credits or not, we can argue that all day long, probably. But I think if you look at the educator effectiveness system in our state, you look at those things as well intended, which I believe they genuinely are, you look at the idea of providing meaningful professional development, the educator engaging in meaningful professional development through either universities, through life experiences, through whatever case that may be. I think when you roll all of those things together, we can make this be very positive. It will be easily manipulated if it wants to go negative. But I think when that collaboration piece, that ability to truly identify what is our world going to look like, the statistics that show kids will have to reinvent themselves 7 times in their life. Our kids in high school right now, it is expected not 7 jobs, not 7 employers, 7 careers in their life. That's a different skill set than how I was educated and how I was prepared to educate. So if our generation is able to move beyond that thought process as we are right now, then I think we can truly start preparing kids for their futures.
And if I could add one thing, even tying back to your first couple questions, you know, right now we've just been talking about content, but as a former teacher, former principal, in my mind, probably the top thing that teachers need to learn is how to build quality relationships with students. And that's the way that we get kids connected to their school so they feel like they have a place. We meet their needs however they come in. You know, if they come in with issues regarding trauma or poverty or race or whatever, our teachers need to learn how to build those relationships with kids, which then helps the kids to learn how to build relationships with others. Because as they go through those 7 careers, it's not necessarily going to be about what they know. It's going to be more about how they treat other people, how they work on a team.
John, I wonder what your thoughts are on this issue.
There are a number of things that do tie together here. So I think we have the university aspect where when I was in college, it was not such a mad rush to get through because it wasn't so expensive. So I think the increasing college costs are now driving the instruction at the university level. So that's a concern. We can argue, I suppose, and finally find some common ground, I suspect, over should we have 1 science license or 3 or 4 or 7 or something. But that does leave aside something that I think is a much bigger discussion, which is how do I work with every child that comes in front of me? And as relates to now alternate licensure, I don't see a lot of people talking about I should be able to be a chemistry teacher simply because I have amazing pedagogical knowledge and skills. We're saying things like I should be able to be a shop teacher because I worked as a machinist for 10 years. So we're really giving short shrift to the pedagogy side of it. And yet as we sit here, we say the pedagogy is so important. Because when I went through 25 years ago, we were not talking about social and racial justice. We were not, you know, my national union has on the record said the single most important thing we can do is work to get rid of systemic racism and to promote social justice. And that kind of pedagogy has to be from day one at the university level. And yet I'm sure their plate is full enough as we say we want our teacher candidates to be able to do this, this, and this. And just as a side note, and I don't mean to make light of this, but the language change that was mentioned about the law 711, legislation 711, and changing it to anyone working in education. Again, not to trivialize that, but I believe there are lobbying groups that are registered as educational groups. So are we going to say that someone could work for the American Legislative Exchange Council as a lobbyist, but because that's considered an educational group, I'm now a licensed teacher? You know, I think that those little language changes are problematic. And if we don't have current practicing professionals from administration, from the college ranks, from the K-12 teacher ranks, we can go down some wrong roads.
John Havlicek is president of the La Crosse Education Association, and he's here with us today to talk about changes to teacher licensing in Wisconsin. He's joined by Mike Bigley from the Whitehall School District, David DeGeer from the Department of Public Instruction, and Pat Marcus from UWL's Institute for Professional Studies in Education. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on teacher licensing and how the changes could impact a shortage of educators in the state. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about how local educators and schools could be impacted by changes to the way teachers are licensed in Wisconsin. The latest state budget created lifetime teaching licenses and encouraged more pathways to getting a teaching license in order to address a shortage of educators impacting schools around the state. But some in education have raised concerns about how this impacts the standards for teachers. Joining us to talk about the changes are David DeGeer, Director of Teacher Education, Professional Development and Licensing at the State Department of Public Instruction, John Havlicek, President of the La Crosse Education Association, Mike Bigley, Superintendent of the Whitehall School District, and Pat Marcus, Director of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse's Institute for Professional Studies in Education. Before the break, John started to bring up the idea of the importance of the programs that are teaching our teachers and kind of the requirements and the things that are set in place to make sure that they're equipped. And so I know that part of these proposed changes from DPI also includes kind of clarifying the approval process for educator preparation programs. And so, David, I wonder if you could talk about kind of what changes we're seeing there.
That's coming from the fact that after our licensing rule, PI 34, was originally created in 2000, we added alternative route preparation programs, which I think John has talked about a little bit. And it was not clear in our rule which of the requirements for preparation applied to our alternative route preparation programs. Wisconsin is kind of unique in that the alternative route programs that DPI approves have to basically meet all of the same requirements as our traditional college and university-based programs. A lot of other states will allow alternative route programs where school districts on their own can train and certify teachers, or you can take a couple classes and a test and become a teacher. There are some alternative routes to licensure that the legislature has created that do not have the same requirements, but the ones that are covered in our rule are ones that have to meet the same requirements as our traditional programs. One of the big differences between programs that are at colleges and universities and alternative route programs, approved ones, is that colleges and universities generally work on credits, majors, minors, degrees, concentrations, whereas the alternative route programs are often working with people who are coming to education as a second or third career. They have a bachelor's degree in the subject area that they want to teach in, and the preparation program will then provide the instruction in pedagogy, how to teach, how to work with kids, how to assess. So that before those candidates get licensed, they have to pass the same content knowledge requirements and the same EdTPA student-teacher performance assessment that our traditional candidates have to do. Some of the changes that we made were providing flexibility to preparation programs in terms of the testing requirements. Under No Child Left Behind, every state had to have a highly objective, uniform state standard of evaluation of which teachers were highly qualified and which were not, and that generally came down to a content knowledge test. That requirement was dropped in the latest reauthorization of No Child Left Behind, which is called the Every Student Succeeds Act. Because we now have some flexibility from the federal level, we're passing that on to preparation programs in saying that in addition to the content knowledge test, they can also use a grade point average of 3.0 or higher in the license area, or they can create a local content-based portfolio. Our preparation programs have been doing a fantastic job for a long time. We continue to work with them, and we trust that they have the skills to really identify which teachers have that content knowledge needed. Another thing that we're doing is we removed some listed general education courses that every educator had to take. For example, they had to take both a life science and a physical science course. And as we talked to our prep programs, the mid-career changers that they were seeing were often having their preparation program extended by a semester or even two in order to meet these requirements in general education that really didn't have an impact on how good of a teacher they were going to be. So part of what we did was we met with a group of preparation program faculty last August. And they were representatives of both the Wisconsin Association of Colleges of Teacher Education and from our alternative route preparation programs. And the question we asked was, what changes do you need in order to more efficiently and better prepare educators? And they gave us several, and I believe we included them all. In the drafting process, as you know, Pat said, some language got changed that was not really intentional, but that was caught, and it is included in our final version of the bill of the rule.
Pat, obviously, you represent kind of the traditional education process for teachers, but I wonder if these changes, I don't know if they, you feel like they are good and kind of are thorough enough to make sure that everybody is meeting the same standards.
I actually support alternate route programs. I think they're fantastic. I think it's a great way for somebody with a bachelor's degree in a specific content area to then go ahead and get the requirements they need to be a teacher. As long as the standards are the same, that's our biggest concern. We just want to make sure that any alternate route program that's approved in our state is still meeting the same criteria as the university is, as other alternate route programs. As David was saying, we have a great group of alternate route programs that are already here and already approved.
John, do you think we're going to be seeing more people using alternate route programs in the future coming into teaching?
Yes. And some of it I think will be fine. Some of it's a little concerning. Maybe David could give some explanation. Not, I don't mean in a defensive way, but some insight or on the issue with this, what were they calling it, a diploma mill down in Atlanta. I don't think that was a DPI thing. I think that was a legislative thing that the DPI had to accept.
Sure. One of the things that was included in the state budget was an alternative teacher preparation program, which had a number of criteria. For example, it had to be a 504c3 organization that had been in existence for at least 10 years and was operating in at least 5 states. And we've only found one organization that meets that, and that's the American Board for the Certification of Teacher Excellence, also known as ABCTE. ABCTE's program is completely online. The way that the legislature wrote the requirement, there is no student teaching requirement as our traditional and alternative route programs have in Wisconsin. They do not need to pass the same tests, including the Wisconsin Foundations of Reading test, which has been probably our biggest or the biggest barrier to licensure that we hear from students and parents and preparation programs and school districts. So someone going through ABCTE does not need to pass that test. They just need to pass the two tests that ABCTE has. So there are concerns. We've heard concerns from both districts and preparation programs about this because DPI is required by law to issue them the same kind of license that we issue to someone who completes an approved Wisconsin program.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about changes impacting school teachers in Wisconsin and the region. We're here with David DeGeer from the Department of Public Instruction, Mike Bigley from the Whitehall School District, John Havlicek from the La Crosse Education Association, and Pat Marcus from UWL's Institute for Professional Studies in Education. And John, I can just tell you're ready to respond to this.
Yeah, not at all. Not in a negative way. I'm glad that David was able to give such a complete answer. And just my last thing, and this really goes back to Mike, I guess, is my concern with the alternate pathways. As long as they have the pedagogy, I think that's great. My concern is with teacher turnover. We get a lot of, Mike can agree to disagree. We get a lot of adults who did not go through teacher preparation that then help out or work in the schools in various capacities. And frequently it is culture shock to people that work in the community in a different career to realize just what happens in a school working with kids every day. And they look at us sometimes like, you do what? I can't do what? This, how does this happen? And because they don't understand that. And my concern then is that if we're getting a 45-year-old person who's been in some other career for a while, now coming in and not having that experience, this creates even more teacher churn than we already have. But I don't know if that's a founded or not.
Yeah, Mike, what are your thoughts on this issue?
I think that, again, each situation is unique. I think that horror story of folks who are now certified teachers who have no background within which to teach children is a tragedy. But the piece that gets left out of this conversation is there still has to be a local district that employs them or no longer employs them. You know, I can think of a small handful of folks I've interacted with in the past few years that don't have education backgrounds, but they would be wonderful educators. Based on their knowledge, based on their compassion, based on their ability to learn and a willingness to engage. I can think of some folks who have been through teacher training programs that don't have those skills, but they have met the requirements. So I think no matter what side of this situation we want to talk about, there still is that local piece of this that someone has to employ that person or allow them access to our kids. And I think that's the greater piece of this. So it's not so scary to me, having that ability, having that authority. This isn't so scary to me. I understand the much more general, greater concerns, the philosophical concerns. I understand those all together. I don't probably worry about it as much, simply because I'm the one that makes that decision on who's going to interact with our kids.
Mike, do you feel confident in school districts' ability to continue to be, you know, as you said, be that decision maker of who, you know, gets to teach students in Wisconsin?
In general, yes, I do. I think that no matter what comes at us, Wisconsin school districts over their history have shown a tremendous ability to refocus, to rebuild themselves, to retool. I think society in general for the past 50 to 70 years has gotten a little bit lax in that whole scenario. I think we're resting on our future or our past success and thinking that it will apply to the future. I think now that we know what the challenge is, now that we know that we are chasing a different target, I have tremendous faith in our public schools. I have tremendous faith in our educators, in our higher ed institutions. I think once we redefine what it is we're truly trying to accomplish, right now, muddy doesn't describe where we are. We have multiple systems trying to figure their way through that whole dynamic with a tremendous number of folks holding on to past success. And now we're into a world that truly is growing and increasing at exponential levels. Prior to the last 10 or 15 years, all types of growth have been linear. Now all of a sudden we're into exponential growth. We're into quick turnarounds, whether that's technology or whether that's pedagogy, quite frankly. you know, going through a teacher program 25 or 30 years ago, trauma-informed didn't exist. We were still treating everyone the same. In some respects, we still are. We're on an agrarian calendar. We're on an 8-to-3 schedule. You know, we were meant, under that pretense, to create factory workers. Now the world is going to require innovators and creators, soft skills, those types of scenarios. That's where we're at. So, again, going back to your initial question, I have tremendous faith. I don't question at all the ability for us to do this if we can truly engage in what that should look like.
We've been talking with Mike Bigley, superintendent of Whitehall School District, John Havlicek, president of the La Crosse Education Association, Pat Marcus, director of UWL's Institute for Professional Studies and Education, and David DeGeer, director of Teacher Education, Professional Development, and Licensing at the State Department of Public Instruction, about changes to teacher licensing in Wisconsin and how local schools could be impacted. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.